It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. One of Pittsburgh's longtime and most impactful leaders is retiring. Esther Bush is leaving later this year as president and CEO of the Urban League of Greater Pittsburgh. We're in the offices of the Urban League. Esther Bush, welcome back to the Confluence.
Thank you so much for having me back.
I remember interviewing you when you came back home to Pittsburgh to lead the Urban League in 1994.
Yes.
What was it that you wanted to accomplish then?
Number one, Pittsburgh is home. And so coming back home and being able to help support the institutions that made me who I am, like Westinghouse High School, Central Baptist Church, and being able to help family and friends with a little bit that I've learned to run such an institution as the Urban League of Greater Pittsburgh was just a dream come true. And I say that very realistically. I was truly touched to be able to come back home in this capacity.
We spoke often after your organization released its annual report, The State of Black Pittsburgh. Right now, 2021, what is the state of Black Pittsburgh?
Well, any of us can point to certain degrees of progress. They are so small compared to where the African American community still is. I think the mayor's report from 2019 that talked about race and gender really underscores the fact that since the last census came out, we have lost so many African Americans in the past 10 years. African American women could move to almost any other major city in the United States and be better off just by relocating. So it's very disappointing, but at the same time, what gives me and all Pittsburghers hope, and I'm talking black and white, low income, middle class, affluent, if we look at Pittsburgh, we have every single thing we need to make it a good place for everybody to live. Pittsburgh can do better.
All right, you say we have the resources, but do we have the will to do it?
And to your point, it's nothing keeping us back but will. I heard somebody say the other day on the news that the United States is run by policies. And so if there are policies that are holding us back, then we need to encourage our elected officials to change those policies.
You mentioned the will. What role do the large corporations, the companies, the major organizations, whether they're foundations or organizations such as yours, have? What is their role to address this issue of black Pittsburghers leaving Pittsburgh?
I think the reality of the lifestyle and the economic status of African Americans in Pittsburgh needs to be accepted and realized where it is. If it was accepted and realized where it is, we would be patted on the back for what we've been able to do despite the limitations. I respect and appreciate, especially given the George Floyd situation, the fact that more corporations have reached out to the Urban League and other similar organizations to say, watching that experience on videotape really helped educate me. We want to do more. But we need more than that. We need to be an equal part of moving Pittsburgh forward. And so hiring a diversity officer, I respectfully say, is a step in the right direction. But one person in a corporation that is a direct report to somebody other than the CEO, that's cute. But every single person that has the ability to hire in that corporation needs to be measured on what they've done in terms of increasing, improving, and advancing diversity. And I'm talking gender and race.
Esther Bush, President and CEO of the Urban League of Greater Pittsburgh, is our guest on The Confluence. Other organizations have really made themselves known since the death of George Floyd and in response to the pandemic, offering mutual aid, holding rallies. We just spoke with Nick Anglin from Black, Young, and Educated. Where do you think the Urban League fits among these other groups, these individuals that are really extremely active and visible to younger Pittsburghers?
I think the Urban League of Greater Pittsburgh, a 103-year-old organization that is part of 91 affiliates across the country, has its place along with any other group that might be 1 year old or 50 years old or whatever. We need everybody at the table. The Urban League provides direct social services in employment, education, health, family support, but it's not enough. We need policies to change. And so the Urban League is playing its role. Each one of these other organizations, they have bit off a piece that is appropriate for them, and all of us together will make Pittsburgh a better place.
You were the first woman to hold the last four positions that you have had in the Urban League.
That's true.
How do you think organizations should promote gender equity in the fight for racial equity?
I think the most qualified individual needs to get the job every time. I believe that women can compete with men on equal footing if they are considered equal. I was told when I interviewed for this job that we really need somebody that can continue the growth and development of our direct social services, but we also need someone that will be more of an outspoken advocate. And I shared with the search committee, as the National Urban League had shared with the search committee, if you get Esther Bush is going to be an advocate. If you don't want an advocate, you really don't want Esther. Because I really try to be honest and call things the way that I see them.
Unless there's a major upset, Pittsburgh is likely to have its first Black mayor after the November election, Ed Gainey. Briefly, did you ever think you'd see that?
Yes, because it was time. We need people that we think are effective, people that's going to move our city from where it is to where it needs to be. And so we're talking about an African-American male. We should not have to think back to Bird Brown. We should think Ed Gainey and make sure it happens.
Bird Brown, a former candidate who did not win. There have been a couple of other African-American candidates in the last couple of decades who did not win. Ed Gainey is likely to win. There hasn't been a Republican mayor since, about nine decades now.
Right.
So how might that change the state of Black Pittsburgh, the state of Pittsburgh?
I think it's going to change the state of Black Pittsburgh as well as the state of Pittsburgh. I shared earlier in my comments that Pittsburgh has adequate resource base so that everybody honestly could live well, could live to their potential. And that's what I hear Ed Gainey saying. But all of us, have an active role to play to make sure that it happens. You cannot look at Ed Gainey and say, Ed hasn't done anything. He was going to do something about Black folks moving out of East Liberty. He hasn't done anything. What have you done to help? And so it's just like when people approach me, well, Esther, the Urban League didn't, and the Urban League should, and the Urban League, will you? What are you doing to help me? Don't just ask me what I'm doing. What supports are you putting in place? And when I say supports, yes, you can come out, help Ed Gainey publicly, or you can just help Ed Gainey in your own sphere of influence. If all of us did just that within our family, friends, and social circles, we would be a much better city.
Esther Bush retires as president and CEO of the Urban League of Greater Pittsburgh later this year after 27 years at that post. Esther, thanks so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. With the number of COVID cases declining and the vaccination rate increasing, more and more companies are having their employees who have been maybe working from home for 15 months return to the brick and mortar workplace. Some workers have expressed concerns about returning, ranging from health to childcare. Audrey Morrell is a professor of business administration and psychology at the University of Pittsburgh. Welcome to The Confluence.
Thank you very much.
Employees don't experience the workplace similarly. Might some employees of color prefer working from home? If so, why?
You know, we are hearing people share stories that they feel as if their exposure to certain types of microaggressions was lessened as they moved into remote work, even to the point of more explicit racial or other identity group insults were lessened in the virtual environment. It doesn't mean that the virtual environment is free from microaggressions, but what I'm seeing from some data and some reporting is that particularly employees of color, employees from marginalized groups, other identity groups were reporting feeling less of that because of the nature of the social and the personal and the face-to-face interactions, which they didn't have during the remote work period.
So maybe there's more of a comfort zone working from home?
You know, it's a double-edged sword. I don't want people to get comfortable that you can't have microaggressions over technologies. A lot of people reported feeling uncomfortable when people could see inside their home. Also, a new category of microaggressions called micro-exclusions, being left out of conversations, particularly when people are using collaborative tools, which you can use very readily and very accessibly, that they were being left out of those conversations. And so there was not the ability to connect as much. And then I've heard some employees, particularly from those targeted groups, commenting that they are judged differently. And so there's greater suspicion in remote work that, am I really working? And so how can I provide legitimacy and confidence to the person I directly report to in a remote work environment where there might be an assumption that, for example, I've heard this a lot from female employees, that I'm not working, I'm taking care of my children.
Professor, does working from home cut off connections to colleagues and to some extent bosses, and can that hinder the chance of advancement and promotion?
You know, the social connections we have at work are absolutely critical, and it's the connectedness that we have that not only helps us do the work by sharing information, sharing knowledge, collaborating towards solutions, but it is also information that's provided that is used and relied on when people are making judgments about who's ready now for an advanced assignment or to move forward in terms of their position within the organization. And so not having access to that could disproportionately affect some groups of employees relative to others. We do know that those social relationships are much more difficult in a face-to-face environment for marginalized groups, for workers of color, and for women to have access to without it being intentional by the organization. So to move to a hybrid or a remote work environment could make that situation worse. And that's something organizations need to pay attention to as they're having those conversations about who to move forward so that workers of color, women workers, are not disproportionately affected by this remote work situation.
What can companies do to best address employee concerns even before transitioning back to the workplace?
First and foremost, it is always a good idea to listen to workers and to do some sort of data gathering about what are employees' concerns, what are their challenges, what are their issues, and what are their ideas about things that should be retained as you go back either to full face-to-face or to some hybrid work environment. And then I would strongly suggest that organizations really need to take a look at how they're evaluating performance moving forward because of the disruption, because of what people had to do to adjust. And so this is a time to really dig into how performance evaluations are done and to really pay attention to bias and other types of judgments that might negatively affect certain employees.
After the killing of George Floyd more than a year ago, many companies said they were committed to inclusion, to supporting employees, communities of color. More than a year later, do you think the needle has moved on diversity, equity, inclusion in workplaces?
I'm going to say that it's too early to tell. I think that what we're going to see is a separation of organizations that have a deep commitment to diversity, equity, inclusion, and social justice versus one that have a more surface or reactionary commitment. And I think that that true organizational transformation of the type that we need to see takes time. It takes a commitment to not only reacting, but being able to really do the transformational work that's necessary.
What should companies be doing to make their workplaces safe for all employees, and not just safe from COVID, but safe in terms of comfort and inclusion?
I think the notion of safety is really important, and we paid attention to physical safety, but I think organizations really need to pay attention to psychological safety. They need to understand that in coming back to work, that the issues that individuals were concerned about aren't going to go away just because we were out of face-to-face workplace. And so issues related to microaggressions, if they were there before, they will be there upon return to work. And then to look at new forms in terms of micro-exclusions, being left out of conversations, left out of opportunities, left out of making those social connections. And that for some workers, if that was going on during remote work, they actually have to make up for that time, make up for being excluded. And so now is the time to really dig in when it comes to engagement. How can we re-engage the workforce? And how can we address those issues that have disproportionately affected some workers relative to others in a proactive way that ensures psychological safety?
Audrey Morrell is a professor of business administration and psychology at the University of Pittsburgh. Professor, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much for the conversation.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Rebecca Reese, Owen Trainer, Laura Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.